Very good afternoon to all, huh? Brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. Today is the 1st of July, 2018. Lesson 78 of our 6 Patriarch Platform Sutta class. It's a Sunday at Wuping Singsa. So we are 1 more minute before 3 o'clock. We wait for another minute before we start our puja. You can, in the meantime, compose your mind, get ready, develop the faith, sadha, then the virya, spiritual zeal. Then after that, mindfully, we shall commence the puja. Okay, now we can commence the puja. Namo Bhansi Sajya Moni Pho. Namo Bhansi Sajya Moni Pho. Namo Bhansi Sajya Moni Pho. Namo Guansing Pusa. Namo Guansing Pusa. Namo Guansing Pusa. Namo Pho Pusa. Namo Pho Pusa. Namo Pho Pusa. Arahang sama sambuddho bhagava buddhang bhagavantang abhivademi. Swakato bhagavata dhammo dhammang namassami. Supatipanno bhagavato savakasangho sanghang namami. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang saranang gacchami. Dhammang saranang gacchami. Sanghang saranang gacchami. Dhatiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami. Dhatiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Dhatiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Panatipata veramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Adina dana veramani sikkha padang samadhiyami. Kamesu michachara veramani sikkha padang samadhiyami. Musavada veramani sikkha padang samadhiyami. Sura meraya maja pama dathana veramani sikkha padang samadhiyami. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Buddhang pujayami. Dhammang pujayami. Sanghang puje. Okay. you all can be seated. Then we can turn to page 1 to recite the verses for opening a sutta. Verse for opening a sutta. The unsurpassed, profound, and wonderful Dhamma is difficult to encounter in hundreds of millions of aeons. I now see and hear it, receive and uphold it, and I vow to fathom the Tathagata's true meaning. Okay. Before we continue, we were at page, I think, 394. Before we continue, maybe we will refer to the short notes that I given out. There is one set of short notes for Thursday class dated 21st June. Then there is a J. Krishnamurti quote on extraordinary seeing. This one is very important. So we'll go through the J. Krishnamurti quote first on extraordinary seeing. You can also call this the direct seeing that lead to enlightenment or awakening. So this J. Krishnamurti quote is very useful, very good. Now I'll read to you. So we are asking, as at the beginning, can the mind come to that extraordinary seeing? Not from the peripheral, from the outside, from the boundary, but come upon it without any seeking. So the key word is, this direct seeing or extraordinary seeing has to arise without any mundane mind that seek enlightenment, or without any craving to achieve anything. So if there is a seeking, there is a craving. That's why Krishnamurti explained it in the same way but clearer manner. So he said, at the beginning, you have to inquire. That's the reason why he says, so we are asking, as at the beginning, means before you start your meditation, before you can realize this extraordinary seeing that lead to the awakening or the enlightenment, he said, can the mind come to that extraordinary seeing? Of course, he said, it's not from the peripheral. You know, peripheral, at the boundary, or from the outside, or from the boundary, but came upon it without any seeking, means no thought involved, no mind involved. That's why all of meditation, you have to realize the true mind, the silent mind that does not think. Without this silent mind, this true mind, you cannot awaken. And this one, without thought, there is no craving, there is no seeking, there is no meditator, nothing. Then Krishnamurti said, and to come upon it without seeking is the only way to find it. See? Only way. So if you have a mind that seek, means a mundane mind that wants to realize enlightenment, or wants to develop the meditation, then that itself is a craving, will stop you from that ability to have this extraordinary awakening or seeing. Because in coming upon it unknowingly, there is no effort, there is no seeking, there is no experience, and there is the total denial of all the normal practices of meditation. That's why there is no practice. You cannot practice to be wise. You cannot practice vipassana. All these are delusion. I read to you again. And there is the total denial of all the normal practices of meditation to come to that awakening or center, to that flowering. So the mind is highly sharpened, highly awake, and it is no longer depend on any experience to keep itself awake. So this awareness is not a thought that cling on to memory, that cling on to knowledge. That's why this particular mind, which is highly sharpened, highly awake or fully awake, and is no longer dependent upon any experience. What is experience? Yeah? Whatever you experience, it comes from memory, isn't it? Without memory, there is no experience, isn't it? These are all experiences, good or bad. You accumulate them as memory. So if you hold on to experience to keep yourself awake, that is acting according to memory, knowledge. You cannot awaken. You will be trapped. When one asks oneself, one may ask verbally. For most people, naturally, it must be verbal. Do you know the meaning of what Krishnamurti is trying to tell you? Because you always cling to the words. You cling to the words of practice, meditation, enlightenment, awakening. You only have the words. And through the word, you try to understand what that thing is. There is no way, because this thing can only be realized by the wise, each for themselves. And the word is not the thing. As I read on, you will understand. It must be verbal. And one has to realize that the word is not the thing. Like the word tree is not the tree. It's not the actual fact. The actual fact is when one touches it. Not through the words, not through the image, but when one actually comes into contact with it through a pure awareness, then it is an actuality. It means the word has lost its power to mesmerize people. For example, the word God is so loaded and it has mesmerize people so much that they will accept or deny and function like a squirrel in a cage, because you are subject to their authority. They have to use the word God, which is almighty, and you are already under their control because they use God as the highest authority. It's just like Buddhists. When they quote the Buddha say, and they use the highest authority, because the Buddha within Buddhism is the highest authority. He is the founder. He is the teacher. So he said, when the Buddha said, you cannot argue with that. But the problem is, he don't understand the Buddha's word. He quote and misinterpret the Buddha's word. Then he used it as an authority against you. That's where it went wrong. So when you understand all this, you will not be deceived. Yeah. But the word is not the thing. Yeah. So the actual fact is, when one touches it, not through the words, but when one actually comes into contact with it, then it is an actuality, which means the word has lost its power to mesmerize people. For example, the word God is so loaded and it has mesmerized people so much that they will accept or deny and function like a squirrel in a cage. So the word and the symbol must be set aside. That's why the direct seeing, the direct perception is before the words, before the concept, before the idea. It's the pure awareness that is aware before the knowing. So this Krishnamurti quote is very beautiful. he call it the extraordinary seeing because it's really extraordinary. We Buddhists call it the direct seeing. Yeah. Or you can say insight. Insight. When you insight into reality, into phenomena, and realize the three universal characteristics, is an extraordinary insight or extraordinary awakening or direct seeing. So this Jai Krishnamurti coincides exactly 100% with what the Buddha's teaching is all about. That's why when you understand, you understand. That's the reason why Huining's teaching is so powerful. It takes you direct to the true mind. It doesn't need to go through all the thought-based meditation that you can't understand. Yeah. Because thought-based meditation cannot lead to an awakening that is beyond thought, beyond mind. You give the short note and Jai Krishnamurti go to Adeline, Sister Adeline. Yeah. We just finished the Jai Krishnamurti quote, Adeline. You have to go back and listen to it, because we just finished. So now we will go on to the outline short note for Thursday class dated 21st of June 2018. This outline short note is very good. You should slowly read through it to develop the understanding. Then file it up. File it up. It will help you. It will also be in our website. But for your own reference, you better keep a file for all these short notes. They have very important outline short notes that can develop the understanding that you need to cultivate, to progress along the path of meditation. Okay, number one. According to Brother Teo, it's very important that we understand what is meditation and what is it that we are doing in the name of meditation. So this part we have repeated many times. I will just go through it. Essentially, meditation consists of two parts. First, if we still need to train the mind to be mindful, then train it using the mind sweeping method, followed by metta to decondition the heedless thinking. So this one has been explained before. I will not explain it again. If the mind is already trained, we can meditate straight away. The key point in meditation are to relax into every mind state that arises, then maintain silence and awareness within to develop the wisdom. The wisdom or understanding will unfold naturally when one is heedful. So these two refer to the first two support for awareness-based meditation. That's why first support is relax, then maintain awareness. In fact, the second and third support, they are related. Then the last one is, of course, trust. So when you have this ability to be aware, the understanding will arise. The silent mind, like what Jai Krishnamurti could say, without craving, without seeking, will awaken. That's why don't try to know. Don't seek anything. Don't try to even arise the thought to meditate. To note this, note that, focus, concentrate. No need. Just relax. Silent. Through that silence, it will understand everything. It will awaken to everything. It will come upon the extraordinary seeing or understanding. Then we go to note 2. The mind's original state before stirring and reaction of mind is already stillness, silent, and aware. So just let every mind state that arises settle down on its own. There is no need to do anything, such as focusing, noting, concentrating, etc. But just maintain awareness within. If an object of meditation is needed to anchor the mind, one can use anapanasati, mindfulness of the in and out breath, very soon the mind will calm down and return to its original state of silent inner awareness when one does not give any mental energy to the thought or mundane mind. The silent mind will develop on its own, and one's meditation will progress naturally, leading to sati and samadhi. The silent mind can meditate on its own. One will then experience piti, sukha, and pasati, which is tranquility or stillness of mind, the silent mind, or the meditative mind. When pasati stabilizes, the mind will enter sati. Then one can be ever mindful in the midst of life and activity to cultivate the daily mindfulness. That's why you need to meditate until the mind becomes so quiet, so still, until it enters the meditative state of pasati. Pasati is the tranquility of mind, stillness of mind, the silent mind, which is also your meditative mind. You need to reach that stage of stability. Otherwise, you cannot develop the daily mindfulness. So this one is very useful. Miss Lee, you need to give the note to Vivian and Sister Tammy. They just came in. One J Krishnamurti code and one. Krishnamurti code haven't given. Tammy, collect your Krishnamurti code. Oh, that one flew off. Give to Vivian one. Okay. This note is same as Thursday class, Tammy. You might already have one, but you can use this. Then later you return to me. Okay, then instruction after meditation. Note 3. Bratio advised fellow Kayamita not to be gullible by following meditation instruction blindly. So this one is a very important reminder. We have to understand what we are doing in the name of meditation. That is, without heedfulness, we cannot meditate. All meditation starts off with the training of the mind to be heedful, as per Dhammapada verses 21, 22, and 23. One need to understand how to cultivate heedfulness. First, train the mind to be mindful and then stabilize it to be ever mindful. Then next, use this trained mind to cultivate Noble Eightfold Path in the midst of life. Note 5. To be ever mindful and constantly meditative are essential qualities of mind state for one to realize the supreme bond-free Nibbana, as stated by the Buddha via his Dhammapada verse 23. So the ever mindful state, constantly meditating and constantly cultivating Noble Eightfold Path. So to be ever mindful, you have to develop mindfulness first, then stabilize it. Note 6. If the mental hindrances are still there, the cultivator must develop the opposite 5 spiritual faculties to counter them. Puja can help cultivator develop these spiritual faculties. Faith in the Buddha and his teaching will arise when we reflect on how wonderful and unique a being the Buddha is. This will encourage us to have the virya to strive on diligently to train the mind to be mindful, and then stabilize it to arise the samadhi leading to the wisdom. That's how the 5 spiritual faculties come to be. The Buddha emphasized the importance of heedfulness via his Dhammapada verse 21. So verse 21, we have gone through many times. The Buddha said, heedfulness is the path to the deathless. The heedful never die. Whereas if you don't train yourself to be heedful, if you are heedless, the Buddha said, the heedless are as if dead. And heedlessness is the path to the deathless. To the dead. You don't stand a chance spiritually. Okay, note 8. When the mind settles down, it becomes so quiet that it will enter sati. When that happens, the mind in sati is not only aware, whatever mindful. Yeah. One can then use this trained mind state to meditate via the daily mindfulness while in the midst of life. So you realize this sentence describes the mind in the same way as J. Krishnamurti, except it uses the word awareness here. Yeah? Here the Buddha said, when the mind enters sati, the mind is not only aware but ever mindful. Krishnamurti used what? Highly sharpened and highly aware. Yeah? You look at the Krishnamurti code. Yeah? It's on line one. Huh? Oh, it's line one. Oh, okay. The first paragraph, huh? Second last line, huh? Second last line. Huh? So the mind is highly sharpened, highly awake, means very sharp, understand? Very sharp means it's alert. Highly aware means very, very aware. That's why ever mindful. That's why any movement, this silent mind can perceive it, can awaken to it, can realize the universal characteristic that is inherent in it. That's why this mind is different. And this mind is no longer dependent upon any experience for it to be aware. Because it doesn't need knowledge. It's an understanding. The moment the mundane mind is not there, then the true mind will arise. Well, the true mind was all the time there. Yeah. You are not able to be aware of this true mind is because you are a bit deluded and clouded by the mundane mind's creation. So all this thinking, mental proliferation, mental emotion, reaction, stirring, these are the sankhara that clouds your mind. And when you are preoccupied with this sankhara, you cannot be aware. You cannot understand your true mind. That's why you cannot touch it. You cannot realize it. So this part will help you. Then we go on to note 9. Oh, sorry. Number 8 we haven't finished. Okay. One can then use this trained mind to meditate via the daily mindfulness while in the midst of life. There is no need to train the mind anymore because this trained mind in sati can be heedful in the midst of life on its own already. Where the mind has entered sati. So it's already aware. You no need to train anymore. Like the object of meditation, all no need already. But you have reached the silent mind, the tranquility of mind, stillness. Until no movement, also it will stay there and aware on its own. You don't need any object of meditation to even hold it or anchor it, no more. That's why you have to develop the meditation until that stability, until you realize that silent mind, the tranquility of mind, paucity, the stillness of mind. The mind doesn't move at all, it just stays there. And when the mind enters sati, in this way, every moment of seeing is in sati. Every moment of hearing, the mind is in sati. Every moment of taste, tactile, or even smell, your mind is in sati. It's like a flow. Every moment of arising of thought process or consciousness, the mind is in sati, fully aware. So that is how meditation can come to be. Then I read on. there is no need to train the mind anymore, because this trained mind in sati can be heedful in the midst of life on its own already. The stable mindfulness coupled with the silent mind can enable one to insight into the three universal characteristics of impermanent, suffering state and non-self, or anicchang, dukkang and anatta. Then note 9. Hence the word vipassana, which means to insight into or awaken to the three universal characteristics, is not a practice, but an understanding. One cannot practice vipassana to reach enlightenment. There is not a practice or a doing. A practice is a repetitive doing. We are following a series of instructions to do things which is mechanical in nature. So now you understand why all this method and technique is not the meditation. It's just a series of instructions to train your mind to do certain things. Yeah. And it has nothing to do with the way for power. Then note number 10. However, most people have been taught to meditate using thought-based method and technique to realize the so-called enlightenment. So if you still have this what they call conditioning in you, then you can never break free. You will be caught in knowledge, in your conditioning, because you believe. Yeah? This is what everybody do. When they go for meditation, what do they ask? Teach me how to meditate. So what you do? Expect. You expect, huh? When you ask people to teach you how to meditate, what do you expect? You ask for a method and a technique, isn't it? Otherwise, how to meditate, you say. But what is method, what is technique? You never question. It's a series of instructions to do what? They also don't understand. That's why they don't explain to you. Yeah, this mind, without the spiritual faculty, has the mental hindrance. It cannot enter the meditative state. So they need to train this mind. They need to anchor this mind. They need to do a lot of things to make this mind quiet. Not knowing that this is not the way to meditate. The way to meditate is to understand that without the opposite five spiritual faculty, the hindrance will be there. And the mind will be heedless, thinking. And all this method and technique is just an initial skillful mean to help you anchor the mind and train your mind to be in sati. Then stabilize it until you don't need the object of meditation. The object of meditation is just like a float that you use in swimming. If you are dependent on the float, you will never know the real swimming. You must be able to float and swim without the float. That is the real swimming. So similarly, you must be able to meditate without the object of meditation, without any method and technique. Then only you understand what is real meditation. Okay? So this is most important. You cannot understand this, you will be gullible all the time. Because all these so-called methods and techniques, thought-based meditation, they are all samatha and energy-field practices involving focusing, concentration and suppression, resulting in the jhanas or jhanic state, absorption of mind and fantastic meditative mind state and experiences. That's why the mind, the experience, is a dull mind. It is not fresh. It's not alert. It's not aware. So all this you need to understand. So according to Brother Teo, there is no need to focus or force the mind into any form of practice. One only need to relax the mind into every mind state that arises and maintain awareness to realize the silent mind or the true mind. The moment one is without thought, means when you are with a silent mind, one is already aware. So you don't have to do anything to try to be aware. So there is no need to try to practice to be aware. Any form of practice or doing is by the thought. And by doing so, thoughts make the mind active again. So sati, which is awareness before the knowing or the stirring of the mind, cannot be developed via such thought-based practices. Sati is to be understood. You have to understand sati is awareness before the arising of thought, the knowing, the perception, and all those things. Then note 12. We tend to give meaning to almost everything we perceive. Hence, we accumulate them via memory through our conditioned thinking and attachment. Thought is respond to memory, so the mind via delusion reacts, stir, grabs, cling, and attaches to everything thoughts create, causing one to be heedless most of the time. So you have to understand this sentence deeply. Otherwise, you can't understand why you become heedless, why you think, why you attach and grasp. Because the phenomenal world to you is like so real. Then note 13. Once we see all this happening in our meditation, means with your awareness, yeah, you see all the movement, all your reaction comes about because of delusion, ignorance. Then you will then understand the need to straighten our views. We are understanding the Buddha's proclamation of sabbe sankhara anicchang, sabbe sankhara dukkhang, and sabbe dhamma anatta. That is, all of sankhara, mental activity and mental states are impermanent. They lead to suffering when you want things your way. And understand that even this body and mind also does not belong to you or to us. Then the mind, with such understanding, will start to behave differently. It will relinquish the grasping and clinging born of delusion. This is how meditation is to be understood and developed. So when you have the wisdom, then all this will fail to deceive you, delude you. That's why you need to develop the understanding to straighten your view. You need to understand how you are conditioned into negativity, how you stir and become angry, emotional, fearful. All these mind states are not you. These are wrong thoughts, born of delusion, born of ignorance, born of not understanding. We are all these mind state or emotion. They are dependent, originating, condition arising. That's why it is impermanent. It come and it go. So how can it be you? If it's you, you should die with it. When anger disappear, you should die with the anger in it. That's why after anger come to pass, you are still around. Then how can anger be you? Why are you still so deluded? That's why in the silent meditation or silent mind that is able to understand all this will develop the wisdom. It will understand clearly how living beings get themselves entangled through this delusion. So all this you have to go back, reflect, contemplate, then develop the clear understanding, the stability of the second turning wisdom. Then after that, when this stabilizes, one day when condition is right, any of the first, second or third turning, your form and mind can awaken, your nature can awaken. It will have the extraordinary seeing, the direct seeing. Then note 14. One cannot practice to be wise, neither can one practice letting go or to have non-attachment, because only wisdom free. So do practice, understand not? I already gave you the clear explanation. You cannot practice to be wise, understand? Your wisdom is an understanding which you need to awaken to. It's not a practice. If you don't have the silent mind to have the extraordinary seeing or the direct seeing, you cannot develop the wisdom. The wisdom is not a knowledge. It's not from memory. That's why all this, unless you are clear, you will continue to use your thought. You will go after thought-based meditation. And you will become gullible. Without wisdom, one will hold, cling and attach. Then who practice? The thought, which is egoic, practice. Then who need to let go? Only the one who holds need to let go. When there is wisdom, one will not hold. So is there any need to let go? When you have the wisdom, you already understood. You will not be gullible. You will not hold. You will not cling. So when that happened, is there a need to practice anything? Like letting go? It's delusion, isn't it? I know this is delusion. I won't touch. I won't cling. I won't hold. So, any need for me to let go or not? No need. That's why the moment you have the wisdom, you understand you are free. Those who practice letting go don't understand. But to them, they think they have to practice so that they are free from that thing. But these are duality created by your mind. How can you practice to free from your own creation? You can't. The creation has its duality, which is always there. So no amount of practice can bring about change. You can only cheat yourself, lie to yourself. Yeah. So the last sentence is, only deluded people practice letting go. Because you are deluded, what you do? That's why you dare to hold on yourself. You dare to cling. You dare to grasp. Yeah, you don't believe. This is impermanent. Lead to suffering. This is empty, non-self. You think it's beautiful. You can own it. You can possess it. It can bring about wealth. It can bring about ownership. Yeah. That's why you cling, you grasp, you give meaning. Then when conditions cease to be, then condition arise for this thing to disappear or separate from you, what happens? You suffer. You become afflicted. That's why you cannot practice letting go. And who is practicing? The thought is practicing. And who is letting go? The person who is deluded and who holds, try to practice letting go. You are being gullible. You are deceiving yourself. How can a person that holds wants to practice not to hold? It's impossible, isn't it? But your thought will tell you, yeah, I suffer because I attach, I cling, I grasp, I hold. So if I don't hold, I will not suffer. Appear logical, isn't it? Very logical, isn't it? Correct, no? But logic is always the opposite of truth. Whatever is logical may not be the truth. But the truth is, the moment you have the understanding, you will not hold. That is the wisdom. If you don't hold, what is there to practice? To let go. The moment I understand, I am not affected anymore. This mind liberate and free. So there is no more practice, understand? You only practice because you think you are not enlightened. You think by every time trying to practice letting go, one day I will become enlightened. You have tried how many times? You go and check. Every time you get angry, unhappy, okay lah, let go lah. I don't want to think about it lah. Then, what happened? The problem come back again, isn't it? The next time something else happens, again you cannot accept the reality. You get angry again, isn't it? Then you say, ah yeah, this is attachment, this is stupid. I want to practice letting go. Then again you don't want to think about it. You think that is letting go. As long as the wisdom is not there, you will always go back to the same old thing. Understand? You will always cling. You will always attach. And you will always have that problem of the mind stirring. But when you understand people are just the way they are, thing is just the way it is, then what happens? There is acceptance of whatever that arises. Then there is no more reaction. That's why straightening your view, developing the understanding and the wisdom is most important. When this is there, you got no more problem. And there is no more practice in the world. So I hope by now it's very clear to you. Can follow on? If you cannot follow, you better go back and listen to this recording again. It's not difficult, actually. It's very easy. But you are so conditioned. That's why it's not easy to decondition the way you have been taught all the traditional Dhamma. The conditioned Dhamma of the Buddhist community that you used to learn from. So when you understand, the understanding completely changes you, allow you to see things very clearly, and your mind is no longer like before. So this is a very important point that you need to understand. Okay, the next one is note 15. Similarly, meditation is not about practice. So you must always remember this. There is nobody inside there to practice meditation. The meditation is about training the mind to be silent, to be aware, to realize the true mind, so that it can insight into phenomena. But most people are so gullible that they are impressed by words and flowery Dhamma to the extent that they meditate without knowing exactly what they are. That's why you are very gullible. You read a lot of books. Wow, a lot of Dhamma. Then you listen to their insight. Wow, a lot of Dhamma. But when you have the understanding, it's the opposite. All these are words, like Krishnamurti say, not born of true understanding or awakening. That's why it's knowledge. And this one cannot awaken you. This one will make you gullible, trap you. Because these are all thought-based meditation, instruction. They haven't realized the direct seeing. That's why they cannot share with you. They cannot teach the way it's supposed to be taught. So these are things that you have to find out yourself. You cannot believe what people tell you. When you find out, understand, you awaken, then you understand what this nature is trying to share with you. Okay? Then turn the next page, page 16. The four foundation of mindfulness or awareness, the four support for awareness-based meditation are relax, aware, maintain awareness 24/7, means 24 hours during waking and sleeping moment, and trust. Initially, it's very difficult to be aware during the sleeping moments, but as one's mindfulness becomes stable, it is possible to carry that state into the sleeping state. Then note 17, relative caution on the danger of doing thought-based meditation or thought-based energy field meditation, because though it can make one's mind very powerful, but it cannot liberate one from suffering. One can be drawn into the psychic field or psychic powers, thereby conditioning more craving and delusion, leading to suffering later on. So this part is very useful. Then, number 18, question by Brother Pang. Why is it important for cultivator to locate the gateway to our self-nature? This is a very good question. Because of condition, the question arises. Then Brother Teo's answer. This is only necessary, means the fourth support, the trust leading to the location of the gateway to our self-nature. This is only necessary for those who wish to walk the Bodhisattva way. The first three support for awareness-based meditation, which is relax, aware, and 24-hour, are sufficient for those who wish to walk the sainthood way. Well, the fourth support, which is trust, is for those who wish to walk the Bodhisattva way. The gateway leads to one's nature, and it is a very unique gateway or point, because whatever energy that one has developed or accumulated will be neutralized once it goes through the gateway before being turned into pure energy. It is a beautiful outlet for trapped energy. The pure energy will on its own activate the chakra and nadis, making one feel fresh, still, and energized from within. Transformation of consciousness will occur, and even the cultivator's health will improve greatly, because the pure energy has the potential to heal one of all disease and discomfort during that time. However, the body, which goes the way of nature, will eventually get sick, grow old, and die over time. This again shows the nature of impermanence. Then note 3. Master Hui Ning's teaching take us direct to the true mind. Enlightenment is beyond thought and beyond mind. So when people lack the understanding that there are two minds, they become gullible. Cultivating with the mundane mind, doing thought-based meditation, which are still within the field of thought. Then note 4. Brother Teo advised Brother Pang not to think too much about the question he had asked, because when one's mindfulness is still not stable, one cannot understand what this is all about. So before you have that stability and understand, don't try to understand. So try not to understand. Don't go and think too much about the question he had asked. Even to see the dependent origination is so difficult, because everything happens so fast. When contact arises, it's not just feeling that arises, but it's accomplished by the 7 universal mental factors or chetasikas, which arise simultaneously. It is not a single-dimensional event, but multidimensional. Only a trained mind that is still having a very stable sati or mindfulness can detect and understand all this. It becomes so sensitive that even the slightest, very subtle mental stirring or movement can be detected straight away. The form and mind which is connected to the true nature will understand what is happening, thus giving rise to the wisdom which is connected to the form and mind. Eventually, because of this wisdom connected, the phenomenon will lose its power to deceive the form and mind, or so-called cultivator, who has realized the enlightenment. Then we go to note 5. Without this training, one can only understand through theory and knowledge. The true mind is clouded by the thinking or sankhara, which are your emotion and thoughts, etc. Through the meditative silence, one can understand how the conditioned arising mind has been deceived by avijja again and again. As one keeps on straightening one's view regarding karma niyama, citta niyama, and dhamma niyama, one's form and mind becomes wise. With this wisdom, it will understand that this form and mind is not me and not real. It is subject to karma and goes the way of nature. So it will understand the 3 universal characteristics which are inherent in all phenomena. Then next page, note 6. It is important to plant the seed of Bohi mind, deep within our nature, so that life after life, when we have to come or choose to come, we can inherit our past cultivation or spiritual cultivation. Unlike the karmic nature which follows us life after life immediately after birth, the spiritual nature can only be inherited after the form and mind is connected to the true nature or true mind. Through the silent mind via meditation. Trust is most important for one who walks the Bodhisattva way. Through trust, one can connect to the true nature and inherit one's past spiritual cultivation. Just like what has happened to Brother Song many years ago. When that happened, he can understand a lot of things, especially those profound teaching and Dhamma, which he does not understand before, even after reading through them many times. Then the next point actually should, the numbering should change. it should come from number 18 to continue 19, but I don't know what happened. The computer, when it goes into the website, it go and change the numbering on its own. So this one was the unupdated version. But as long as you understand, no problem. So the next note number 1 is actually a follow through from 18, should be 19 onward. You can amend yourself if you want to. Okay, I read as per here, the note 1. Brother emphasized the need to understand the basic essential Dhamma of the Buddha. Otherwise, we will be wasting our time going into meditation, just like what happened to the 4 monks during Bodhi Dhamma's time, who sat in meditation not understanding what they are doing in the name of meditation. So this Bodhidhamma, when he was invited to come to China to share the Dhamma, there was a story that relates how all this, the abbot and the 3 senior monks, they're supposed to have a 3-day, 3-night of silent meditation retreat. Then Bodhidhamma joined them. So that particular story I have already shared with you all under lesson 75. You go back and listen. Then today I just finished the short notes. I just finished the editing of the transcript that Sister Pamasuri and Alicia helped to prepare. So this one is very useful. I sent it out today for spelling check. And our usual whatever mistake that we can find. Then after that we will update it. Then hopefully before the end of next week we will get it finalized so that it can be printed. This one will help, because this one I describe in the transcript. I describe the practice of this 4 monks together with Bodhidhamma very clearly. And with this you will understand very deeply. So this part you need to listen back to the lesson 75 or wait for the book to come out. Okay, we go to note 2. No amount of sitting can transform us if we lack wisdom. So it is not the posture that matter, but one's wisdom which enable one to break free from one's delusion and suffering. As long as we do not understand that we have 2 minds, and we keep on cultivating using the mundane mind, we are wasting our time. This is what Bodhidhamma told the abbot and the other 3 monks. Because within that story is very interesting. Where this monk thought they must sit, understand? So they thought sitting silently is Zen meditation. Or in Japan they call it Zazen. So their rule is you cannot speak or talk or arise any speech. Otherwise you are not fulfilling the silent meditation. Not having the understanding of what they are doing, they become gullible. So they keep on sitting. And Bodhidhamma knew that they are wasting their time. So what happened in that story was, I just briefly tell you. One of the monks actually panicked. After about 12 hours or maybe more, 12 to 16 hours of meditation, then suddenly there is some sound from the window, then the wind came and blew off the candle. So this monk panicked. He said the candlelight has been blown off. And what is this eerie sound? Then the monk next to him said, you are disqualified, you talk. So what happened? The monk next to him also disqualified. Well, he also talk. Then the next monk say, I didn't talk. Again disqualified. So the abbot thought he's smart. I'm the only one who didn't really talk. Yeah. Then he realized he also talk. After that, left Vibohidhamma. You know what he did? Huh? He took out the cover of the what they call the cup. Eh? Then he grind it on the table, make some sound, like the polishing sound. So they all look at Bodhidharma and ask, "What are you doing?" Bodhidharma asked back, "What are you doing?" The abbot answer, he said, "We are sitting in Zen meditation to realize Buddhahood or realize enlightenment." Yeah. In Mandarin is 我们在坐禅成佛. Then Bodhidharma replied, "I am polishing this glassware to make it into a mirror." Then the abbot and the other three monks laughed at him. He said, "How can you polish the glassware and make it into a mirror? A mirror is a mirror. This is a glassware. Cannot." Then Bodhidharma replied back, "Similarly, you all are doing things that you don't understand. Then how can you expect to realize Buddhahood? You think by sitting you can become Buddha?" Then they look at Bodhidharma. They ask him. Then they realize Bodhidharma understand. So the abbot asked back, "How can we realize Buddhahood? How can we realize the enlightenment?" Bodhidharma's reply was very simple. He said, "We have to start from basic, kenpen." Yeah. So this abbot and the other monk was confused by him. Start from basic. You mean go back to the initial samanera cultivation and all those things? He said, "We are senior monk. We are already abbot. We are already very experienced, very senior. How can we start from basic?" You know what Bodhidharma told them? Start from basic means start from your mind. Sing wei gen ben. If you can't even understand who are you, what are you, what is this mind all about, how can you meditate? Then who meditate and what meditate? He said you have to understand. Start from the mind and inquire. Why did the Buddha say mind is the forerunner of all things? Mind is cheap. When mind arises, everything arises. Which means all of your good and bad, sun, earth, arise from the mind. That's how you look at this mind. And you must understand what constitutes evil, what constitutes wholesome. Otherwise, you cannot develop the mindfulness to see the evil roots and the wholesome thought. This is what meditation is all about. When you understand that mind is the forerunner of all things and there are two types of mind, then you can meditate. Because from there, you start. You start to be aware of this mind. Then you start to understand how through delusion you stir, you react, and you get yourself entangled. This is meditation. If you are gullible, you are like all those people hoping one day to become enlightened. Just sit quiet until you're so tired, so sleepy, so gullible. And like what I used to tell you, you are not supposed to torture yourself in retreat and meditation. You dare not even move. You dare not even release your fat. And you are so tense down there. So uneasy, uneat ease. That is not meditation. Then sometimes you go and focus, concentrate, and develop the energy field and experience the fantastic meditative state. And you think that is equivalent to enlightenment, achievement. You are being gullible, you do all those things. Because the real meditation is no doing at all. Relax, silent, to understand, to develop the wisdom, so that with this wisdom, your mind free. liberty. Nothing to do all this with all this meditative mind state, focusing concentration, or what they call energy field, absorption and all those things, noting, chanting and all those things. All this has its purpose, where they are just skillful means, like method and technique, to train your mind, to anchor your mind. So know them and understand them clearly. Then do with understanding, and then you can chant. Then you can know. You are training. But if your spiritual faculty is already there, you don't need all this. Your mind is already in sati. You can meditate until your mind has already entered sati. What is there to practice? What is there to train? You're just silent, aware, like Krishnamurti said. This extraordinary seeing or awakening can only arise through what? A mind that doesn't seek. Understand? The mind that seeks is what type of mind? The mundane mind that has craving. Understand or not? The mundane mind that has craving, seek. Yeah, I better write this down. Who is seeking? The mundane mind that has this craving. Six. So if there is no mundane mind with the craving, there is no seeking. No mundane mind means the true mind. Without the mundane mind, the true mind arises. That's why you must have this silent mind. And if you cannot understand this, which is very basic, you cannot meditate. You will be constantly drawn into thought-based meditation without understanding. Okay? Is this clear? Good. You can understand then. Very good. I salute you. So I read to you again. No amount of sitting can transform us if we lack wisdom. So it is not the posture that matters, but one's wisdom which enables one to break free from one's delusion and suffering. As long as you do not understand that there are two minds, or you have two minds, and we continue to cultivate using the mundane mind, then we are wasting our time. Then note 3, all Dhamma arise from the self nature, wholesome and unwholesome, and all form of duality arise from this nature. If we cannot understand this basic teaching, we can forget about meditation. All forms of thought-based meditation will not lead to the true awakening. All the essential Dhamma spin off from the Four Noble Truths. So it's important that we understand the basic essential Dhamma of the Buddha, which have so often been emphasized by Brother Theo in all his sharing or talks. Especially the three right views of Kama Niyama, Chitta Niyama, and Dhamma Niyama. Finally, this talk is like a revision for everyone to reinforce their understanding, so that your understanding can go deep into your nature. We should continue to aspire, invoke vows and affirmations via power of merits, to have the causal same condition, to have this right understanding life after life, so that we can still cultivate accordingly with understanding, even when the sasana is not around. Where it is very difficult for this form of mind to encounter the genuine Buddha Dharma to cultivate. Planting the Bodhi seed deep within our mind will also create condition for us to be reborn with this kind of understanding, so that we can continue to perfect our nature life after life without having to fear getting lost again during the period devoid of Buddha Sasana. So this is the end of the notes. The draft outline notes were prepared by Pon Chi. Okay, so we finish. Do you have any question? Anybody got any question? You can ask. Otherwise, we can continue with our Diamond Sutta. Turn to page 393. The student didn't have tape recorder as we do now, so they wrote down their notes with brush and ink and compared them among themselves. "You should take good care of this lecture," the master said. "They are diamond jewels. Print and dispute them, and so take living being across. I know that you all believe in me, and so I don't need to transmit the rope. Besides, the great master Bodhidharma said that beginning with the six patria, the rope should not be transmitted," he said. "I originally came to China in order to transmit the right Dhamma and take across all the confused living beings. For me, this one flower in the future, five petals were open, which means the second, third, fourth, and fifth, and sixth patria. And the fruit will come to bear of itself. That is, there will be no need to transmit the rope. Transmitting the Dhamma was suffix. That's why the rope and the bark transmission stop after winning." This is why the fifth patria told the sixth patria, "As the rope is a source of contention, please do not transmit it, because it will lead to unnecessary fighting. Should you continue to transmit it, your life will hang by the thread. The fruit comes to bear of itself. You should know that the fruit which ripens in this line is just all of you who have taken refuge with the six patria. The first character of your Dhamma name is Guo." So we have gone through Guo. So I think Xianhua follow Huining. That's why my generation or disciple that take refuge, my whole family that take refuge under Master Xianhua, he changed our middle name to Guo. Like my name, Zhang Jian Kun. He take the Jian out and put Guo. Zhang Guo Kun means everybody follow that fruition lineage. So maybe it is meant to have a lot of this cultivator develop the fruition to become enlightened. "The fruit comes to bear of itself. You should know that the fruit which ripens in this line is just all of you who have taken refuge with the six patria. So the first character of your Dhamma name is Guo." And it means fruit or result. "So don't forget to ripen, yeah? Means to develop the ability to awaken, yeah? Or they call it the fruition. As I, in the Pali tradition, they call enlightenment as path and fruition. So path and fruition is very important. Marga pala, yeah? The Pali word. Marga is path. Pala is the fruit, fruition. So when a being become enlightened, even at the sainthood stage, the four stages of sainthood. First stage of sainthood, they call it the Sotapanna. Second stage, Sakadagami. Third stage is Anagami. Then finally, Arahan. Each and every of these, they have two types of beings. One is already on the path. The other one has realized fruition. So they call it path and fruition. I write it down. Path. So path, the Pali word is marga, and fruition. Fruition is pala. That's why under the salutation to the Sangha, when you chant Supatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangha, then later on you will come to the last part of the chanting. These four pairs of beings means each of the sainthood, first stage, second stage, third stage, or fourth stage, they have one pair of enlightened beings. One is on the path, one is already developed the very clear understanding. That's why they call it the fruition. So as a Sotapanna, you can have path and fruition. Sakadagami also same. You know the difference between these two or not? Yeah? I have explained before. Anybody want to try to explain? Yeah, you try. Parmasari, yeah. This one, if you understand, it will help you a lot.
Path is for those who have a glimpse of the stage.
Okay. Then, fruition.
Fruition are those who have already attained the stage.
Oh, okay. Okay, you're off it. I have to maybe explain it. In clearer term, she has understood it just certain aspect. You see, when you are on the path means what? It's just like the cultivation of the Noble Eightfold Path. If you can recall, Satta Visuddhi. You know what is that? Satta is seven, isn't it? What is Visuddhi? You all familiar with Visuddhi Magga, path to purification. The whole Visuddhi Magga Sutta talk about the seven stages of purification. Then you reach a stage where they say path and non-path. Purification of path and non-path. What is path? What is non-path? That's why I always share with you all one. When you are on the right path, cultivating the Noble Eightfold Path correctly, cultivating the four foundations of mindfulness correctly, what will happen? What will happen? The last Satipatthana class. When you are on the right path, what will happen? Means you have cultivated correctly. Your seven factors of enlightenment will keep on arising, isn't it? Correct or not? If you are on the right path, the factor of enlightenment will arise. True or not? You have been doing all those meditation and you never see any of the seven factor enlightenment, and you say you are doing vipassana. You better go and find out yourself. Congratulations to you. If you think that is the Buddha's teaching. That's why don't be gullible. If you cultivate whatever method and technique you use, if it doesn't bring you back to the Noble Eightfold Path and see the seven factors of enlightenment unfolding, you are not doing the meditation as taught by the Buddha. That's why path and non-path means you see it clearly that this is the path that leads to enlightenment. These are the teachings. That's why the factors of enlightenment come to be. So if you cultivate some other form of meditation which is thought-based, what happens? The first factor of enlightenment is what? First factor of enlightenment, first of the seven factor of enlightenment is sati. Seven factors of enlightenment. The first one is sati. So if you do thought-based meditation, can you realize sati? Cannot, isn't it? Your thought is active, isn't it? The thought is trying to meditate, isn't it? Your thought is trying to focus and concentrate, isn't it? So sati, the first factor of enlightenment, also cannot arise. Then what are you doing? You're wasting your time. Like Bodhidharma said, you don't understand. Dhammapada verse 21, 22, 23 very clearly point out you have to be heedful to stand a chance to be enlightened. And what is heedfulness? Ever mindful, constantly meditative. If you cannot be mindful, how can you stabilize it to be ever mindful? That's why you don't understand meditation. You cannot cultivate. That's why thought-based meditation cannot bring about awakening. And there must be no seeking. Only awareness can bring about the mind that doesn't seek. Where it's just aware, no thought, nothing. No thought how to have craving. Who is seeking? The mundane mind that has this craving seek. So this one, sati, is awareness. Nothing to do with the mundane mind. So you need to start with sati. Then you need to stabilize it to be ever mindful. And when it's ever mindful, what can you use this mind for? Investigation of Dhamma. Very good. So Dhamma Vichaya. You use it to investigate Dhamma. So when you investigate into the Dhamma that the Buddha has taught you, the essential Dhamma, like Dhammapada verse 21, 22, 23, Dhammapada verse 1 and 2, then you realize that they stand up to investigation. Then like the law of karma, avoid all evil, do good, purify the mind, and how people get entangled, how karmic friction comes to be. Then you realize the Buddha Dhamma is so beautiful. That's why when you investigate the Dhamma stand up to investigation, what will happen? You will have pity, joy, isn't it? This one, the third one is the virya first. Because when it stand up to investigation, you will have this spiritual zeal or virya. Because you have joy, understand not? This will drive you. Oh, sorry, virya, not viraya. Virya. You will have this virya, or spiritual zeal, that will motivate you to cultivate. Then as you cultivate, your sati will stabilize. So when your sati stabilize, you experience piti, which is the fourth enlightenment factor. You feel the spiritual calmness, the spiritual joy in you. the spiritual rapture in you. This mind becomes very calm, very peaceful. Then there's a lot of joy inside. Then you may also continue to relax into it and experience sukhang. Sukhang is the mind become very blissful. But this is not an enlightenment factor. That's why the Buddha say, don't attach, don't cling, don't hold on to sukhang. Just let it be. Then what are you supposed to do? You're supposed to continue to relax until this sukhang or blissful state of mind also disappear. Then what happened to your mind? Your mind will go into stillness, tranquility of mind, the silent mind. That's why this is paucity. Paucity. This is the tranquility of mind, stillness of mind. Stillness or silent mind. And this is the meditative mind. So that's how all these factor enlightenment will arise when you do it correctly. Then when paucity falls into place, the silent mind can see things as they are. But it needs a stability. Because without stability in the midst of life, when you see something, the mind is not collected and unwavering. So what you need is you stabilize this paucity. That's why I say you develop your daily mindfulness until your paucity, tranquility of mind or stillness of mind is so stable that in the midst of life, it is still aware and stable. So this samadhi, which is a sixth enlightenment factor, will arise. So this is the unwavering mind. So this unwavering mind is collected. Because it's collected and unwavering. Then there is this equanimity, the last factor enlightened. Equanimity. Or they call upekkha. Equanimity. This equanimity, the last factor of enlightenment, is born of wisdom. This one is not the one held together by the energy field, by the fourth jhana. That one is not the real equanimity. That one is energy field. So this one, born of wisdom, it does not stir. Because this samadhi, initially, is still without the wisdom. But when sati and samadhi, means this sati stabilize, it becomes paucity. Then when paucity is very stable, even in the midst of life, when you are able to cultivate within the daily life, then this samadhi will arise. This samadhi is unwavering and is collected. That's why at the moment of sense experience, during that time, your mind does not stir, does not react, does not move. So this samadhi will make it unwavering. It will not move. It will make it collected. That's why you can see things as they are, because there is no movement. And this mind is collected, silent, aware. That's why it can awaken. It can insight into phenomena. It can give rise to the extraordinary seeing or the direct seeing that Krishnamurti talked about. And when this happens, wisdom will arise. And when wisdom arises, the seventh factor, the last one, equanimity will arise. Without wisdom, this one cannot arise. So with this, wisdom free. You don't need anything else. The mind is always in the state of equanimity, This is what the second aspect of duality is all about. When you transcend duality, means you have the wisdom that is not deluded. This wisdom liberates the mind. That's why this mind is always at peace. Not trying to cling and grasp at the duality. It's not affected by duality anymore. But you will have the wisdom to understand that duality exists within the conditioned world. And it depends on who you meet, who you talk to. You will understand, you will not argue. That's why this enlightenment factor of upeka or equanimity is very powerful. It's born of wisdom. That's why anywhere, any place, any time, you are at peace. You will not be affected at all. Your mind is different. This is a real enlightenment. So path and friction means when you are on the path, the factors of enlightenment keep on arising. Then you keep on understanding. As you investigate, you straighten your view, your avijja become less and less, less and less. Then as you break free more and more the fetters get destroyed. Understand? Right? The 10 fetters that binds the living being to the world, they will get destroyed or rooted out. So just like the first stage of sainthood, let's say sotapan, when you're on the path, then just like Paramasri said, you have a glimpse of Nibbana, one moment. But you understand clearly the first three fetters cannot affect, cannot disturb them anymore. What is the first fetters that bind? Sakkaya ditti, self-delusion. So you will know this form and mind is not real, not him. Dependent originating, condition arising, it knows. That's why after that, there is no more rite and ritual. Rite and ritual means, like people tell you, you die already, you become one. Your spirit will become one. He knows you are being deluded. But this form of mind is not real. The consciousness that come out is not you. But this one, subject to karma, he will understand. And he will not believe all the nonsense that you tell him. And he will know how to die. Because this one is not him. He know. There's a rite and ritual no more. You tell him all this superstition, or he won't believe you. But he understand what that thing is. Then his faith in the triple gem, the third factors, unshakable. You tell him the Buddha is not true. The Dhamma is not true. There is no enlightened being. He will not argue with you. He know you don't understand. Because when they go through the path, they will understand. That's why these three fetters gets rooted out. Then how did it become friction? Friction means the understanding has become so stable. Means after he has gone through the path, he continued to cultivate the factors of enlightenment keep on arising. You understand? So when the factor of enlightenment keep on arising, his understanding becomes so stable until he reached fruition. The moment he reached fruition means he can explain to you. Before he reached fruition, he cannot explain to you. It's just like last time Brother Song used to ask me. Because I told him the wisdom when you awaken, it's already there. You don't have to worry. It's not a knowledge. Don't have to remember. Don't have to commit to memory. Yeah, I say this is all from the top. So what happened is when you are on the path, even that glimpse, the one moment of cessation, you already have the wisdom. But your wisdom is not stable. That form and mind understand, but it cannot explain to people. It cannot teach. But when it reaches fruition, means it understands so clearly, he can tell you very clearly what this form of mind is all about. You understand? So when he can explain and share, you have reached fruition. The second stage is the same. Sakadagami, the next two factor is sensual desire and ill will. During that time, it's not rooted out yet. At the second stage, it's only attenuated. Understand? Attenuated means reduce. Your sensual desire and ill will, anger, reduce. Not rooted out yet. You understand? Reduce means, even as a sotapan, you can still get angry. Understand? You can still have this craving, sensual desire and all things. But this fourth and fifth factor is not rooted out. But when you reach the stage of Sakadagami, second stage of sainthood, this sensual desire, you will get attenuated. Means you got less of this sensual desire and craving. Means a lot of things cannot, like last time, draw you, make you interested, make you stir, react, and get angry. No more. So what happens is, as you attenuate it, you start to understand deeper what craving is all about. What sensual desire and ill will is all about. You go into it deeper. Then one day with the wisdom, when you reach the friction, all of a sudden, you realize with that stability of wisdom, you can root it out. You will understand that sensual desire and ill will is dependent originating. Condition arising, not real, not me. You understand? They say after you root it out, you are on the third stage, anagami. Anagami means the first five factors rooted out. No more sensual desire, no more ill will. Then this one has to stabilize. Stabilize until finally it will come to understand that the other five factors, they are all not real. They still trap you, even at anagami stage. At anagami stage, he still got craving for the form and formless jhana. You understand? The first four form jhana and the second set of formless jhana. Means first, second, third form jhana and fourth form jhana. Then fifth, sixth, seventh, and eighth formless jhana. They still have attachment to that. But they like to go and experience that. They like to stay there, thinking that it's very peaceful, very calm. Yeah. So that is still a craving. There are still fetters. So the six and seven is attachment to form and formless jhana. Then what is the eight fetters? Huh? What is the eight fetters? After form and formless jhana is what? Huh? Mana. What is mana? The Malay word is mana. M-A-N-A. Minor conceit. Understand or not? You still have this conceit in you. Understand or not? Even at the anagami stage, you know, the conceit in you, you know this form and mind is not you, but you still believe your form and mind is more superior than other people's form and mind. Understand now? Where you think you already Arya, understand now? You already have all this understanding. That minor conceit is still there. Then what is the nine fetters? Huh? Let me see. Read. Anagami, the mind can still be restless, no? So you somehow keep on asking me, a lot of cultivators, Pratyu, why my mind cannot become peaceful? Every time got thought, anagami also got this restlessness of mind. You think you can reach the state of no thought so fast. Not until you arahan. Arahan means what? The 10 fetters, which is the last one, is what? Ignorant, avijja. That one also you have to root it out. Until you got no more delusion, no more ignorance. Then your views are all straightened. Then what happened? No more ignorance means no more rebirth consciousness. That's why arahant don't take rebirth. Understand? Then when you hit that stage, you need to stabilize these last five factors, the understanding. Then only you reach friction. Then only the arahant can teach you the Dhamma on those five fetters. 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10. So you understand now, what is path? One is friction. Path is you are on it, but your wisdom not stable yet. So I used to give this example. It's like Dhammador, understand not? When you hit the first stage of sainthood, what happened? You open the first Dhammador, understand not? Yes, you have rooted out the first three fetters. So you go in, the Dhammador, then you realize these three, you have already understood, because you have a glimpse of it, you know these three fetters gone. But then inside that Dhammador, you will see a lot of things. You will understand a lot of things related to these three fetters. That's why it will stabilize. Path means you are on the path, you already like able to assess the Dhammador and able to go in and investigate and understand all those things. Then when you understand, it becomes stabilized, you realize the friction of it. It becomes Magapala. From Maga, it reaches friction. It's just like cause and effect, understand? When you're on the right path, you will realize the friction. When you are not on the right path, you will not realize the friction. It's as simple as that. And the moment you realize the friction, means everything about that three fetters that you root out, you understand, you can share, you can talk about. And you are very clear. That's why path and friction got a lot of different. But if you really understand, the only difference is not much. The only difference is he cannot express it to you, understand? He cannot explain it to you. But inside, very clear. When he meets something, he will know how to handle it if it's based on the first three fetters as a sotapat. But the moment he hit this, he can even explain to you what this form and mind is all about. He is very clear already. So fruition means stability or understanding. You have reached the fruit of the first stage of sainthood. It's just like the mango tree. You plant, then you reach the stage of path. Path means you have planted it correctly. Means what? You have put in the right condition. Means you have the topsoil that is fertile, the seed that can germinate, then you can have the appropriate good water and sunlight and all that. Then you attend to it. And then with that condition, it will grow, understand not? Means you understand how to plant the tree. Then as it flower, what happened? Means you see the factors of enlightenment coming out. You see the plant growing, you see the flower, then after that, the flower pollinate and become fruits. That's why if you are on the right path, you have planted the right condition, the factors of enlightenment will arise. It's just like the plant. You will see the fruit, finally. Before the fruit, you will see it growing nicely. Then later on, the flowering. Then when the flower get pollinated, it become fruit. And the fruit slowly ripen, understand not? Until fully ripen. Then it will drop off. Or you can pluck it and have it as your food. So in a similar way, cultivation is quite similar. You enter the Dhammador, inside you will understand all the treasure that is within. Because you have already had the ability to open that Dhammador. That's why each and every one of these, the analogy is like you enter the Dhammador with that understanding. Because that fetter has been rooted out. When you root it out, you're on the path. As you finish the cultivation of the path, you will reach a stability of understanding, which they call friction. So friction is the stability of understanding. Stability of understanding. That can allow you to share or teach those understanding. This one means you are just on the path. On the path. Have glimpse. Glimpse or glimpses of cessation or form a mind. So these glimpses or cessation of the form of mind is the realization of Nibbana. Even one moment, momentary, is enough. Yeah. That's why the sainthood way is much simpler. Okay? Clear? Anybody got any question? Oh, we exceeded 4:30. Yeah? Okay, I just finish off this part, then maybe we can have our meditation. All of you should ripen right away. Most importantly, don't be lazy. Bodhidharma gave you all the prediction long ago. The sixth patriarch himself said, the Bodhi fruit accomplishes itself. They both knew that in the future they would be all of you disciples in America with the first name Guo. So a lot of you, I think, who take refuge under Shenhua also have this. How many of you have this Guo? None of you. None of you take refuge in Shenhua. Oh, you are? Oh. Brother Hung. What about Miss Lee? You didn't? Oh, you didn't. Oh, okay. For your teacher, Poyan Sang Lao. So yours, you got separation. Shenhua, no separation. Whether lay person or ordained, is the same. That's why when I bump into certain people who has also taken refuge under Shenhua, they straight away ask me, what's your name? Guo Samo. Then I know already, also same lineage. So all the Guo is the same lineage. So this one is just their tradition, nothing important. Okay, then the last part. The fruit they spoke of is just all of you. That fruit is you. You are that fruit. The two are one. That's why you have this. It's like Hui Ning already during that time predict all these people who take refuge, they will be able to realize that friction, that awakening. That's why they give you this name, Guo. Okay, we stop here. So you can have your meditation now. I was set maybe 25 minutes, 25 minutes. Okay, we can off the light, so that you can have your 25 minutes of meditation. Okay. For those who still wants to meditate, you can continue. For those who have enough, slowly, mindfully, come out of meditation. Always remember, the purpose of the formal meditation is already explained. You have to check and inquire, are my spiritual faculties stable? Is my mindfulness stable? If yes, straight away go into the meditation. If not, find out why. Then if you want to continue to train the mind, meditate, then you find out what is suitable for you, the skillful means. Then develop whatever you need to develop. You need to train in sati, train, stabilize it, stabilize it. You need to do the deconditional thinking. You need to decondition your heedless thinking, then just do it. Then you combine to with metta to make the mind have this inner well-being. The inner peace leading to inner well-being are very important. These are the first two benefits that will arise if you really want to train your mind to develop the meditation. You can't bring about inner peace leading to inner calmness and inner awareness and inner well-being. Means your meditation is not been done properly. Then the inner peace that come about should be through a free mind, not a conditioned state, not focusing, not concentrating, not trying to do anything. It's just through understanding. The spiritual faculty takes over. When the spiritual faculties are there, it will arise, the sati. Then when the mind doesn't think, because you understand the original state of mind before stirring is already that silent mind, the stillness, the awareness. So you just silent everything, relax and let it be. Then the mind will return to its original state of stillness, silent. That's what meditation is all about. No doing, just relax, silent, let things be. Then all this will fall into place. Then no need to have method and technique and all those things. But because you don't know how to relax, you don't know how to maintain awareness, you keep on following what people tell you to do. All of the noting, concentration, absorption, fixing, focusing, then the method technique tend to make you active again. Then that doing, you never mindful, you never inquire who do, the thought do. If the thought is actively do, that is thought based meditation. You cannot realize the true meditation. So all this will give you a very clear understanding. Then you know how to start. You don't walk the wrong step. You can bypass all the thought-based meditation, straight away realize your true mind. And when you can do that, you progress very fast. The daily mindfulness is very important. After that, you have to stabilize your daily mindfulness until your mind is in sati. So during the formal meditation, you can meditate until the mind reach paucity or realize the silent mind. That is already a very good beginning, a very good sign. Then from there, stabilize it. Allow that sati to stabilize until the mind enters sati. And most of the time, you are in sati. That's why the whole cultivation moves together. As you straighten your view, as you have less self-delusion, less avijja, you think less. Then you got more moment of peace, calmness. Then as you understand, your mind react less, stir less. Then as your spiritual faculty stabilize, become better and better. Then your hindrance become less and less. This is the sign of progress. If your spiritual faculties are not being developed, you cannot progress, especially sati. But without sadha, virya, sati, very difficult to progress. When you have the faith, sadha, leading to the virya through understanding who the Buddha is and how special his teaching is, then it will lead you to diligently cultivate to develop the sati. The key to meditation is to develop sati, then stabilize it to be ever mindful. Then continue to relax into it, silent, until the silent mind can be realized. Then stabilize it to daily mindfulness until throughout the day you are mindful, you are aware, leading to heedfulness to cultivate Noble Eightfold Path. If you do that, you are destined for enlightenment. Very simple. Okay? So now we can continue with the second session for you to report your meditation. Whoever who wants to report meditation or ask any question on the mic, you put up your hand, then we will pass you the mic. The mic is there. Anybody? You have to create condition. That's why you have to report your meditation, otherwise you won't learn. Anybody? You all have become so shy. You can't learn, I tell you. You just report your meditation. What's so difficult? What are you doing just now? For half an hour or 20 minutes or 25 minutes? What are you doing? If you don't report, nobody can advise you, nobody can correct you. That if you have been doing the meditation, you will have very good question. You will have question that is relevant. Because you will reach certain part of your cultivation where you need to ask question. Because not everything is straightforward unless you have your past cultivation. Unless you are able to inherit your past. Pass the mic to Jin Hao.
Good evening, I'm proud to you. I have questions regarding contemplation, you see. So, nowadays when I do like morning walk, I was mindful on my kaya, especially my food. But at the same time, I was also paused whether should I do contemplating when I'm doing the morning walk. So I was puzzled on these two, whether should I just focus on my kaya when I do the morning walk, or should I use this time, quiet time, to do contemplating.
Okay, so why can't you inquire into this? Because the question that arises is a doubt. Because you're not sure, isn't it? So doubt is a hindrance. Why can't you resolve it? Resolve it means what? Inquire. Now we do together. So, what are you supposed to do? The first thing you say is, when you doing walking meditation, you try to? You use the word what? You try to? What word do you use? No, that one is second question. You say you try to be mindful of your kaya. So what are you doing? You go back to meditation. What are you doing? Mindful of kaya means what? You are trying to develop sati, understand or not? So what's wrong with that? Want to develop sati? Develop. Why you go and ask another question? Should I contemplate? You want to contemplate? Make sure you contemplate. It's either or. Both are cultivation. Contemplate means second turning wisdom, to develop the stability of the second turning wisdom. That's why you reflect, contemplate, and inquire into the Dhamma. That's why I said when you find out, you will understand. Then I want to correct you is, you try to be mindful of your kaya. the word is very impressive, you know, so like a lot of Dhamma there, you know. I try to be mindful of my kaya, you know. But what did I teach you at the retreat? Don't try to be mindful, understand? Who is trying? The thought wants to be mindful. Then you are not relaxed, understand? You have a problem. The thought wants to be mindful. And how can the thought be mindful? Because the thought has a craving. It wants to seek what? Mindfulness. So when you seek mindfulness, mindfulness cannot come when your thought is actively seeking. Why do you want to seek? That's why I say walk. Walk naturally until body and mind is one, then you will know what sati is. That's why everything you do, aware. Initially, very clumsy one. Split second, the awareness is gone. Never mind. Bring it back. Like bowing. Do until body and mind is one. Meditation also say meditate until the mind becomes still, no more movement. You're supposed to do all this, so do. Then when you are ready, you will know how to contemplate. But as you understand, then the understanding will bring about the calm mind, which is in sati, which is creative for you to reflect, to contemplate. Then you will understand the essential Dhamma, the teaching, very fast. That's why I say, just do. Why can't you inquire? Am I training my mind to be aware? Okay, if you are training, means what must you do? You do what you have to do. If the spiritual faculty is there, then no need to train the spiritual faculty. Otherwise, go and reflect and contemplate on who is the Buddha. Develop the faith. Saddha. Then, when you understand, you put it into practice. Then that saddha will bring about that spiritual zeal, because you know this is important. I have to do it. That's why the spiritual zeal will drive you to cultivate. Then you develop sati. You only have to really, really sincerely put it into practice with the faith and persevere. Then it will come. Then one day when the sati comes, you will know. The body and mind move as one. Everything becomes different. I have described it so many times inside the notes. Why can't you understand it? Because you are very scared to inquire. You always want answer. What must I do? Am I doing it correct? Like the day Miss Lee, very often. Concerned about right and wrong. There is nothing to do with right and wrong. Right and wrong is a doubt. It's a duality. Why do you want to know is right or wrong? And who is wanting to know? The thought. Why can't you just understand what the Buddha teach? The notes and all those things. It's all in the note, in the sutta, in the transcript. Understand it. Pariyati. First level of Dhamma. Mean learning of the teaching. I must understand this teaching, like I explained. Without the spiritual faculty, my mental hindrance is there. My mind cannot meditate because it hinders my mind from going into the meditative state. So what must I do? I must either cultivate the spiritual faculty. If I have not done it, I still want to meditate. Then I use the mind-sweeping method combined with metta to decondition my heedless thinking for the time being. Yeah? For the time being. So that I can be peaceful, calm. Then stabilize it with anapanasati. Then the inner peace will arise. Then if I want to bring about inner well-being, I radiate love and metta so that my mind state has the well-being, so that my body feels better, so that I can develop the meditation easier. Then if you need to stabilize that mind that is already calm and peaceful, do it. Whether anapanasati, chanting, bowing or whatever, do it. Need to walk, walk. Need to contemplate, contemplate. Understand? What is so difficult about that? Because you are scared to inquire. You dare not find out. You're very scared you go wrong. Who is scared? Your thought is scared. Why can't you have faith in the Buddha and his teaching? Then the question you ask is different. You will be very confident. Yeah, I walk. Then my body and mind is one. After that, what must I do? That should be the question, understand or not? When you haven't done this, then you ask, should I continue with the mindfulness or contemplate? Means you never inquire, you never really find out, you never really go into the essential Dhamma. Pariyati is not clear. Means you are doing without clear understanding as yet. It's not a question of what must I do. I check, I told you, I inquire. Are my spiritual faculty there? Write it down. Then check one by one. Not there. Cultivate them. How to cultivate? Start with puja. Do you have the faith? Do you chant? Do you do your religious routine, daily one? Before you sleep? After you wake up? In between? Daily mindfulness? Did you do that? Otherwise, your sati cannot stabilize. If every Tuesday, Thursday or Sunday only you come, you sit for half an hour, the rest of the day you are heedless, you don't stand a chance. You understand? That's why in between, you have to develop the daily mindfulness. You have to determine to be aware. Just silence your mind. Be with the moment. Just do. Do until the sati come and you will know. The form and mind will know when it is in sati. And that is the real meditation. It's not difficult. When you are determined to be aware, the awareness will come. Determine is not a craving. Means you make the aspiration. I determine. I determine. Means I make aspiration. I want to develop this awareness. Then I go all out with the faith, sincerity and diligence. I just cultivate. I just do. And it will come. But it's not a craving. Means I make affirmation. This form and mind determined to be aware. That's how I did it in 2 weeks. But when I realized I haven't really started it 30 over years ago, I reversed my cultivation and started my daily mindfulness. Then I realized, split second, my mind is gone. I'm not aware. Then I determine. Every time it slips off, I bring it back. Then not long, all of a sudden, I saw body and mind as one. Then everything I do is in sati. But when I sit, I relax, silent, nobody taught me. My anapanasati until become very quiet, very still, until no movement. Then I don't go and do all those sitting, touching and foolish things to make the mind active again. It was from my path. I continue to relax into it, silent. Then I realized the mind enters sati. Then I saw all those movements magnified. Then the awareness come in, the sati come in. Then all this become self-knowledge, self-understanding. You have to do it until it arises. Otherwise, you cannot understand. Otherwise, the sati remain a word. Like Krishnamurti said, the word is not the thing. That's why just do. Don't try to know. Understand? So we should thank Chinna for the question. Otherwise, a lot of you are trapped in this. Because you dare not ask. Understand? Then when I say all this, it will also test you, understand? Or test your ego. If you feel bad, the next time dare not ask, means you still have your ego, understand? Or your egoic mind is still very strong. Who is Paisi? It's the thought, it's not you. It's the condition that you arise, like you ask that question, it helps. Because I realize a lot of you dare not ask, but you don't know what you are doing. That's why you cannot ask. But if you really cultivate, like Ng Bi last night, Adeline Dale, or even many others at the Thursday class and other class, Tuesday class, they will have the question. Even like PG and all, they will have the question. Where they reflect, they contemplate. Then when they share, they really share. They come out with their own understanding. And they just speak. Don't worry about right and wrong. What is important is the question brings forth the condition for Dhamma to flow, for you to learn. Then listen attentively. Then need to make notes. Go back and write it down. Then you will progress. Okay? That one is very good. Because you have the parami, you have out in the website, you have a lot of good parami. The only thing is, your past, you didn't develop the wisdom cultivation. You have been doing different things. That's why this life, when you understand, you must spend more time on the cultivation path and develop this understanding, then make aspiration. Before you have this understanding, means the sati, before you really understand what it is, you cannot make the strong affirmation. There's no use. You don't know what you are aspiring for. That's all. But when you have the sati coming, then you see the Dhamma, everything, then you understand the non-self, anicca and dukkha, then you make aspiration, affirmation for this understanding, life after life to come. That is very effective. Because you understand what this thing is now, that in future you will inherit. Well, your bodhi mind cultivated, and you diligently cultivate, then this life, you have the condition to realize it. Then with that realization, that merit is very powerful. Then you invoke power of merit for this type of understanding to continuously arise within your nature, life after life, whenever you choose to come or you have to come. And this is what you have to do. That's why just do the daily mindfulness. Let it arise. Then you need to contemplate, contemplate. Nobody is stopping you. That's why the other thing is, I say, this is a full-time job. Means throughout the day, you must cultivate. You must either reflect, contemplate, or in the state of sati. That's what I did last time. In the early 80s. Earlier on, in the early 70s, my anapanasati was very strong. That's why I was actually trapped in anapanasati. I was experiencing the peace, the calmness, the absorption, the blissful state. The PT, the Sukha, and all those things. Then when I hit Pansati, then only I come to understand the true meditation. After I met Ajahn Yantra, I think in the year 86, 87, or 88, I forgot already. Then, not long, by the year 1989, this nature already have the understanding. So all these are possible. It doesn't take you long. The moment you understand, you just do. Then it will come, it will arise. Okay? Yeah. So let us thank Chin Hao for the good question. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, who else? Who is next? You just report your meditation. Yeah. Or whatever. Ah, yeah, tell me. very good. Yeah.
Good evening. I rather to, I would like to know, because when you said that when we decondition our mind, then you suggested us to use anapanasati. Is there any other? Because I found that I have aversion to that.
Then you can do anything because anapanasati is the one that the Buddha suggested under Sana. Anapanasati is to develop the mindfulness of the in and out breath, nothing else. But if you are not familiar, you feel that it's not suitable, then use whatever that you are familiar. Whatever skillful means, method or technique to stabilize it. If you are familiar with whatever Buddha or even the rising and the falling, just silence your mind and go into it. What you need is to stabilize it until it becomes very subtle. Until no one is chanting. No one is meditating. You understand? Whatever object of meditation is up to you. Then I didn't say decondition the mind. Understand? What I actually say is decondition the heedless thinking, understand? No. That's how you have to get it right. When you sit, you try to meditate, you realize a lot of thought. So what do? Means, you have to understand, this thinking is still there, thoughts still arise. Means, my spiritual faculty are not stable. My sati is not stable, not established. The mental hindrances are there. Okay, so once you establish that, what must you do? What must you do?
mean establish the, I mean, that, what you taught us is that we relax, aware, feel and relax, feel and relax.
Okay, that one is mind sweeping method. But before that, when you already know, the moment you sit down, if you have a lot of thinking, you will know that means your mind is not peaceful. There is no sati, not stable. Then you have to understand through the essential Dhamma, what did the Buddha say? The Buddha say there are mental hindrance. That's why it hinders your mind from entering the meditative state. That's why this mental hindrance make you not peaceful. What are the hindrance? Sensual desire, ill will, sloth and torpor, especially restlessness of mind and doubt. So these five things make you like that. So what you need is to cultivate the opposite five that will help you to root all this out. And this five, you have not been cultivating, as I ask you, when you understand that, then you inquire, have I cultivated the five spiritual faculty to overcome the hindrance so that I can be in the meditative state? So that the spiritual faculty of sati can set in. Because the moment I don't have the hindrance, my spiritual faculty will take over. And the easiest one is sati. Because sati is just silent. When there is no mental hindrance, my mind will enter sati straight away. Where there is nothing to hinder your mind from becoming peaceful. Away. Okay? So, work on the spiritual faculty. So, how to develop spiritual faculty? The Buddha said, puja. Puja, chanting, and all those things. Yeah, you can ask. Yeah. You want to ask something?
Yeah, I got one. Because when you say that when the mind becomes silent, sometimes I found that it is becomes dull. It's like...
Okay.
It's like dull and...
Correct. Correct. So what do you do?
I open my eyes, to get more awake.
Okay. So
but
that,
I don't know
that... No, never mind. We inquire together. That's how you will learn. So you open your eye to make yourself alert so that you're not sleepy. You try it out already. Does it work? Initially. Because when you open your eye, you are not so sleepy. Understand? But did you enter sati? Did you become more mindful?
Not every time.
Not to say not every time. Even as you do it, the best you can is your eye is open. Understand? Your eye is open means the sense data come in. Understand? So how can you be quiet and peaceful? That's why I say you have to find out and inquire. If I am doing this, it's no different from people say, go and wash your face. Understand? Then come back, you feel more fresh, you sit, you won't be sleepy. But this mental hindrance of sloth and torpor or sleepiness will come back. Because you don't understand. You have not rooted it out. Out of the five spiritual faculty, which one counter sleepiness? Okay, we go through one by one.
Virya.
You have not enough virya, understand? But sometimes it may not be that. Sometimes the body is too tired, understand? Not enough rest. Because you work in the office nowadays. Then you got a lot of things coming in to give rise to the heedless thinking. Because you have to remember things, you have to do things. You are not mindful in the midst of life because you haven't developed the stability of mindfulness. So acknowledge it. Nothing wrong with that, understand or not? You are a human being. You have not developed the understanding. So accept that reality. Then you ask yourself, okay, if this is the case, when I come to the meditation, I will have this hindrance. Then check, is my body too tired? If too tired, I need to sleep. I do lying down meditation. And if I need to rest my body, I sleep. Let it snore, but maintain awareness. Initially, you cannot maintain awareness. Never mind, sleep. At least you have a good sleep, understand? Better than sitting down there, torturing yourself, becoming like not easy, not at ease. They're having a lot of this problem coming in and disturb you. The other thing that I used to teach you is when sloth and torpor arise, just understand that your spiritual faculty are not there to counter it. So how can you root it out? To root it out, you remember what I tell you? There are 5 ways to root out unwholesome thought and mental hindrance. What are the 5 ways? You definitely cannot use the first 2 ways. Eh? What is the first way that the Buddha taught? Think of the direct opposite. Wholesome thought. This is not a thought. This is sloth and torpor. So you have to think of the direct wholesome spiritual faculty and activate your virya. Can you do it? So you have to try. Understand or not? If you cannot do it without the virya, you will doze off. Then see the importance of training your mind, meditation. The virya will be there. If I see the importance, I determine no matter how tired, I will persevere, I will do. Then the third way is the one that you should do. Then you will overcome it. That's how I overcome it. You see, the second way is think of the consequence of holding on to this wrong thought. Or in this case, think of the consequence of having this mental hindrance or mental hindrance of sloth and torpor or sleepiness affecting you. Yeah, it's a hindrance. You cannot meditate. Understand? So you have to determine to reverse it, to abandon it. So how to do it? The third way. Third way means what? Silent the mind. Just aware. Understand not? Then be with the stay with it. Don't arise any dislike for that sloth and torpor, for that sleepiness. You try it. I tell you, something will happen. Because you dislike that state, that is aversion, you cannot see, your sensual desire and ill will is there. Your ill will, your dislike for that sloth and torpor make you what? Open your eye. Want to go and wash your face. Want to do everything. That's why I say, don't fight the hindrance. Don't suppress the hindrance. Don't do anything. Just let it be. It will cease to be. But this is a conditioned state. When I understand, it's gone. So what happens if you allow it to be, you will go through this state. You are very sleepy, but you are sati, where you are at peace. You have the understanding. This is the mental hindrance. So the Buddha said, don't do anything. Silent. Away. Just like the bullock cart that crossed the pool of water. As long as the bullock cart don't go over and stir, the water is clear. You understand? So don't do anything. Don't allow your mind to stir. Means you are not fighting it. You are not suppressing it. You are not trying to control the sloth and torpor. You are not trying to even push it away or do it away. So what do? You relax and silent and be with it. Then you find out what happened. You will be very surprised. When you relax and silent without the aversion, there is no mental hindrance. You understand? Because all your other mental hindrances are not active, except this sloth and torpor. You understand? And if you don't create dislike, the aversion also not there. Definitely there is no craving towards sloth and torpor, isn't it? And you are not restless, isn't it? When you are sleepy, you are not restless, isn't it? Then you don't have doubt, isn't it? You just want to meditate. So to meditate need understanding. That's why I say you meditate. So you silence your mind, relax and stay with it. Then you know what happened? Without the mental hindrance, sati come in. That's how the sati comes in. Then virya come in. All of a sudden there's a shift of consciousness. You go and try it out. Then the next time you got no more problem. You know sloth and torpor is a conditioned state. When I have my sati without the mental hindrance, my mind will have sati and sati will take over. Then my spiritual faculty or sati come in. Then I can meditate. Then when sati is there, piti will arise. I will become calm. then virya will also arise. But there will be a shifting. Out of the blue, all of a sudden, there is bright light flash through, and that sloth and torpor completely gone. Even pain also, do the same. It will be completely gone. But you must relax. You must not fight. You must not suppress. You must not do anything. Just silent. Be with it. Understand? The awareness and the sloth and torpor go into one. Well, you haven't had the acceptance of sloth and torpor. When you can accept whatever condition that arrive, where there are causes and conditions, the acceptance free your mind. Well, the acceptance does not stir the mind, does not react, does not create mental hindrance. That's why you are at peace. And when you are at peace, sati will take over. You understand? That's how your spiritual faculty come back. Then with sati, virya, your mind become bright and clear. Then you realize, how come it's so amazing? That's how you root out. And until today, from the year 1989 until now, I never have sloth and torpor anymore. I never have pain as a problem anymore. But I saw it. I silent, relax, and be with it. And it flashed through. That's why I know you must be relaxed. You must have the spiritual faculty. Otherwise, you cannot overcome the mental hindrance. This one will help you a lot, understand? But you have been trapped. And you use your word to quote you back. Huh? You don't like the word anapanasati. Understand? But you are not used to it. And for your Burmese type of meditation, you all don't like the Thai tradition of anapanasati. It's nothing to do with Thai tradition or what. The Buddha say your breath is neutral, understand not? A very neutral object of meditation. You cannot develop attachment to it. You understand? You cannot get excited over your breathing, isn't it? It's not something that you can attach to. The breath is just a breath. And this breath, as long as you have to live, it will go in and go out. And it's always in the moment with you. So you can be with the breath in silent awareness. You are in the moment without thought. That's why anapanasati is very powerful. Or you can be aware of anything. We are breathing, naturally go in and go out. Understand? You have to breathe, otherwise you die. Then you meditate until you don't need to breathe, then internal breathing. Understand? You understand what is internal breathing? Subtle breathing, like no breath, but fully aware, the subtle breathing inside. They call it internal breathing. Internal. Means you breathe without the breath. You breathe with awareness inside. Internal breathing. So when you have all this understanding, then your spiritual faculty will take over. Then you realize without the hindrance, you are already peaceful, aware. Pain also the same. Pain is aversion. Also same. Sloth and torpor also aversion. But you don't like that state. Restlessness of mind also same. Doubt also same. But you don't like. And I realize a lot of Buddhists, cultivators, meditators go wrong because they dislike what? The unwholesome state of mind. You understand? That's what Shen Xiu did. Understand not? Polish until it shines so that no dust can alight. But he doesn't like dust. Sloth and torpor, hindrance, pain, aversion, all are like that. Unwholesome. Understand? Negative thought like anger, sensual desire, envy, jealousy. So since you don't like, he wants to cling on to peacefulness, calmness. And that is not meditation. Meditation is not about chasing after peacefulness, understand? Calmness. If you do it correctly when you are mindful, it comes as a byproduct. Because when you are mindful, piti will arise. When you are mindful, you can investigate the Dhamma. Then when it stands up to investigation, virya will arise. Understand not? Then sati will help you to develop the faith very strongly. Because it can help you to investigate the Dhamma. Then when it stands up to investigation, your faith becomes stronger. Understand not? Then this one will drive you to practice. That's why virya become comes to be. Then this virya will accelerate your cultivation because you go all out to develop mindfulness. Then once you stabilize it, you will experience piti. Understand? And all your mental hindrance will be gone the moment piti is there. You understand? Because you feel good. You don't feel pain anymore. You don't feel all the negative state anymore. Do you understand? That's why piti is an enlightenment factor. You need it to make your mind feel good. There must be joy. Piti is a type of joy. Understand not? Meditative calmness, peacefulness. So without piti, you don't like to meditate. Who like to meditate? But the danger of piti is as you relax into it, your mind becomes very blissful. Understand? How many of you have experienced sukham? Huh? The blissfulness of mind. Cannot be so few. Really very blissful one. See? A few. Really very blissful one. It becomes so blissful until they call it the tingling sensation and all those things. Like people like got fear. You know Hokkien? Goose pimple. Goose one. Goose? A bama. You call it bama. Goose bama. Or you call it it tickle you, understand? Because it's so blissful, understand? Until you really, it's so blissful. Don't know how to describe it. Until you are in that state, in that bliss. And a lot of people attach. You know why? After that, they continue to look for that state whenever they see it. Otherwise, they say, my meditation is no good. And this is attachment. Understand? So meditation is not about good or bad. It's about whether you understand. Understand means when my factors of enlightenment are there, I continue to develop them until I have this wisdom, equanimity. You understand? So it's nothing to do with good or bad meditation. Bad meditation like sloth and torpor come, actually is a good sign. It's a blessing in disguise, understand? Otherwise you cannot break free. So it's for you to cultivate, for you to develop the understanding. That's why you must understand. Otherwise you cannot meditate. Otherwise you continue to be gullible, understand? Like what people used to tell you, I don't like anapanasati. So what you do? You try something else. And who is trying? The thought. And what are you trying? All those things that people ask you to develop to fight the sloth and torpor or to fight the mental hindrance. Then you try to do away with it. Understand? You don't like that state. You want to push it away. And that is aversion. And that is a mental hindrance. No different from that guy that note pain, pain, pain. Understand? No? Means you are creating what? Mental hindrance. You dislike that thing. That's why you label it as pain. Why must I label? I stay with it. It's a phenomenon. Then when I stay with it, without labeling, means without creating the mental hindrance of aversion or anger of the pain, I can be peaceful. But I accept this reality. The reality is, if I don't know how to relax, this tension will arise and will give rise to that consciousness. And if I perceive that consciousness with dislike, I create mental hindrance. And I cannot be peaceful. Sati cannot come in. If I don't create, I accept, and I stay silent, aware, the mental hindrance will not be there. Without the mental hindrance, sati take over. You understand? That's how meditation comes to be. All the other hindrance same. Restlessness of mind, doubt, sensual desire, whatever is the same. Understand it. Stay with it. That's why I say, anger is not you. Anger will cease. Even piti sukha, they will transform. Because these are conditioned state. You relax, silent, you will continue to transform until you reach paucity. When you reach paucity, everything becomes quiet and still. Then you will not transform in that. Then you realize your silent mind. This is your true mind. Then you realize, with this, I got no problem. Without thought, I am peaceful. I am aware. And this was my true mind all along. Because I don't understand this, that's why I go and stir the mind. I go and react to sense experience. I go and focus, I go and concentrate, I go and do everything that people gullibly teach you. And they still tell you this is vipassana. Note this, note that. Focus, concentrate, do jhana, I also. So now you understand. It's just sati, awareness. Aware of whatever that arises. May be mental hindrance, enlightenment factor. That's why you read the Satipatthana Sutta. When the enlightenment factor of sati is there, you must be aware. Understand or not? When the enlightenment factor of sati is not there, you must also be aware. The mental hindrance is also the same. When the mental hindrance of sloth and torpor is there, aware. Aware means what? I don't fight. I don't cling. I don't develop aversion. I just maintain awareness. Stay with it. The third way. Then the fourth way is to trace the origination factor. Then retrospectively, reverse it. How did I enter sloth and torpor? Well, my spiritual faculty is not there. Understand not? Then, not only the spiritual faculty is not there, I create mental hindrance. Understand? But you don't like that state. So how can you be free? When you trace all this and inquire, you understand. When I understand, I don't do that always anymore. And then you try what I tell you. Find out. You don't have to believe what I say. Find out. And so many people break free. Because I found out myself through my past cultivation. Nobody taught me. No book write about this. Okay? Very good question. Sadhu to you. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. So we should thank Tammy. That's why I say, just be sincere. Ask. Then it will arise the condition and you will learn. Understand or not? If you don't ask, you won't learn. Why? There's no condition for Dhamma to flow. And you assume you know. And all these are mostly, I use the word mostly, knowledge. Because you have not really developed the ability to be aware, mindful. So once you break free from this, when your sati come, you will have a lot of virya, a lot of faith. Understand? Just the teaching stand up to investigation, and now you know, without the hindrance, my mind is peaceful. Sati take over. And you become different. You go and do it. I think within a week or what, you will experience it. Then later on, you will come and share. Then you will thank my nature for telling you this. And you will be different. Because you can progress very fast, actually. You have the faith. You have the condition. But your old way blocked you. Your old conditioning blocked you. So if you need to ask for forgiveness and determine to straighten your view and change the way you understand meditation, then you will progress. Otherwise, the old conditioning from your past practice and all those things, they will become like a mental hindrance to block you. Because chances is, in the past, in certain life, you may be teaching people what you are learning, what you have learned from other people. And when you teach them wrongly, what happens? They get trapped like you. And this is coming now. So you teach people this, you reap what you sow. In future you come, you will meet teacher that teach you the same thing. You understand? That's why this life, you break free and make the aspiration to have this new understanding follow your life. Then every life you come, the old conditioning no more. The new understanding will unfold. That's how that vow, the aspiration through power of merits can bring forth the way. And that faith is very important. Tammy, thank you so much for the good question. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Very good. We better end. I heard the alarm went off just now. Okay. So the rest of you, don't be shy. Just ask. Whatever you don't understand, so that the condition can arise for the real understanding to unfold. Because today I like it because I explain more detail. Last time at the retreat and all those things, I explained this before, but I don't have enough time to go into the detail, understand? Because we have to rush through a lot of things in the retreat, understand? Now, the whole Heart Sutta book has to finish, and there are so many people with questions and sharing. So at the retreat, it's intensive, and we don't have much time to explain things. But here, different. That's why I say, make use of it. The second session, you got half an hour meditation, then 1 hour for Q&A. Seize upon the opportunity. And this is where you can learn a lot from now onward. So you understand that there is nothing to be shy. You have everything to gain by reporting your meditation and asking questions that will allow you to develop the straightening of the view to do the meditation correctly. Okay? That should be the inquiry and the understanding. Okay, let us recall to mind all the wholesomeness that we have developed today. Then we will share these merits with all beings starting from the devas. Akasata cha bumata devanaga mahindika punyang tang anumoditwa cirang rakantu lokasasana itta wata camehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya idang menyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo idang menyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo idang menyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo imina punyang kamina Mame bala samagamo, satang samagamo hotu, yawa nivana patia, sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, pay respect mindfully to Lord Buddha, Kuan Yin Bodhisattva, and all the worthy one. Then we end. Are you sure it's recording? Miss Lee, you check and see whether it's recording or not. But normally the red light will blink. You sure? But normally, it's blinking. Yeah. Yeah, just I was checking, not blinking at all. Sadhu. Yeah, sadhus. It's recording, don't worry. Well, today one is very useful, very important. If it's not recorded, means it's meant to be. So you all have to ask the question one more time. But looks like it's recorded.